What you want is like the words and phrases that when you put it on their website, they're like, "Are you in my house? Like, how did you know? I was just saying that this morning." And one way to do that is to ask them and listen, but that takes a lot of work. And so what I often do with my clients is we find a situation where you, the person who's trying to sell, can empathize with where they are. So maybe you haven't been in that exact situation, but where can you emotionally empathize with where they are?
You're listening to the No BS Agency Podcast. We talk strategies that can take your 1 to 2 person branding agency from $5,000 to $30,000 per month without hiring employees or working your ass off. All you have to do is cut the BS. I am Pia Silva. I'm delighted to share a conversation I had recently with Marcia Shandor of Yes, Yes, Marcia, because it was all about storytelling and using storytelling in an ethically persuasive way to connect with people and close clients. A little bit about Marcia. She is a storytelling and persuasive communication coach and trainer. She has taught thousands of individuals and groups of executives, entrepreneurs, and professionals across the world and has had rave reviews, no surprise here, by clients like Facebook and Royal Bank of Canada, HelloFresh, and Shopify. Before launching Yes, Yes, Marcia and her career as a storytelling coach, she actually spent 15 years working as a radio DJ. Another thing that is not that surprising, even though that's freaking awesome, because you can tell that she's just really dynamic and a natural communicator and storyteller. Obviously, she gained powerful understanding of how to still tell stories over that 15-year career. Her work has been featured in Forbes, BBC, Mashable, and to find out more about her, go to yesyesmarcia.com. Go there just to get inspired by her brand, by how she communicates. And if you go to yesyesmarcia.com/no BS, you'll also get a bunch of goodies that she's going to layer on top of each other throughout this conversation, because every time she came up with a new idea, she said, oh, let me put this on that website too. Okay. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Marcia. Marcia, I'm so happy to see you.
Yes, this has been, to see you too.
This has been a long time coming.
Months. Can I show you the poster I just wrote down based on
Sure.
It's brilliant. She does a daily blog. It's usually Monday to Friday. She doesn't do it every day. It's called the Brass Ring Daily, and it's really short, and it's kind of about creativity and productivity, and she like writes musicals and does other writing stuff. I just wrote this down on a post-it.
Solid incremental progress.
Because she said, don't let instant validation be the enemy of solid, or like instant validation is never as good as solid incremental progress. Like, that is a good remark. Because you're like, oh, but I could put up a post and then I could see how many likes it gets. Or I could just keep working. I feel like this is going to be my theme for the year.
I love that.
Somebody gave me a novel that's like, wait, I'm going to show it. Okay, if you're just listening.
Uh-huh.
Somehow.
Yes, it's about
being broadcast.
5 inches thick.
Yeah, it's over 900 pages and the writing is tiny. I have to wear special glasses just to be able to read it. But it has a lot of Russian history in it that I want to learn. And then I just thought, what if I just read 3 pages a day? And I told my friend and she went, by the time you die, you'll have almost finished.
And isn't that true for anything worth pursuing in life? You know, I just did annual planning with my program, with all of my students, and it's all about, okay, we can do this big goal, but then let's just break it down to just, what are we just going to do this week? And let's not feel so, and I think a lot of people, when they think about goal setting, annual planning, they think of it as being this really hard, intense thing, right? Oh, here's my goal. And now I'm going to have to wake up at 5 o'clock and like do all these crazy things. I'm going to have to meditate for an hour and like whatever it is. And I was like, no, it's the opposite. It's like, get rid of all that stuff. What are just a couple of small incremental things you can do today? And don't even worry about the other stuff because you only have a few hours in a day anyway.
Yes.
So just do those things. But choose the big goal at the beginning of the year so that those little things can be clear each day.
Yes. It's so good. Solid incremental progress. Sip.
I love that. Sip. Just
it's
sip
not a
it.
Great acronym. Just sip.
Just it actually works though.
Yeah, I guess so. Yes. Yeah, sip. Nice. Okay.
Well, let's jump in. So you are a storytelling and persuasive communications coach and trainer. You work with both corporate and small businesses. Talk to me about this. Like, why do small businesses hire you?
Sometimes it's because they're writing like a keynote or a talk, but sometimes it's because they know they need to sell and the idea of doing that makes them want to cry. And so part of what I'm doing is using storytelling and what I call ethical persuasion to show people that you don't have to do it in a gross way. I think what so often happens for those of us who didn't get well-versed in sales, but then suddenly find ourselves running a business, which by the way was me. I was a radio DJ for 15 years. Everyone sold to me for 15 years. It was wonderful. And then suddenly I started my own business and I was like, oh no. Because I thought it meant going around being like, please buy my stuff, everyone, hire me. And that felt creepy and gross. And what I've realized is it's not that. It's just being like, hey, person, do you have this very specific problem that you were literally complaining about this morning using these words that I'm using right now? Do you have this very specific desire that you think about all the time in the frame of reference that I'm using with these words right now? I can solve that problem and get you to that desire. And then people are just like, oh my gosh, yes, please. And that's why I call it ethical persuasion, because it's persuasion, not coercion. You're not tricking anyone into anything. Like if you were, you wouldn't get repeat business. You know, you want people who like give you good references and enjoy your work, partly so you don't feel like you have to take a shower afterwards, but also it's just good business sense. And so it's really about thinking about who you're speaking to, thinking about like what's going on for them. And then the storytelling comes in there when it's like, let's tell the story of how their life sucks right now without you in it. And then let's tell the story of how wonderful their life is going to be once they've hired you. And only then do you introduce yourself as the solution. Because anybody who doesn't relate to those pain points, anybody who doesn't relate to that desired outcome is just going to walk away. And that's great. You don't want to work with those people.
Okay. So something that I absolutely love about you, as you were talking, describing like what you mean by this, and, you know, I can fit it into the way that people teach sales, is that nothing about the way that you speak or share feels like the way people speak and share. So when you say, well, you got to talk about, do you have this problem and do you want this solution? And I think automatically, like we've all seen that sales copy, right? Mm-hmm. Are you tired of, meh, meh, meh? You know, I think of that Friends episode where Joey's like, I can't open the milk, you know, oh no, there must be a better way, right? And that's like not, I don't even think that's unethical. It's just stupid and
it's just embarrassing.
It's yeah, it doesn't feel good. And I also think along the lines of please buy from me. I think that's the other part of sales that people are worried about. Like they don't want to be like, are you sick and tired of doing this thing?
The key is figuring out what is the exact language they're using. Let's say we're talking about the copy of your website or a sales page or something like that. I think this also, by the way, goes in like any conversation you have with not only any prospect, but like anyone you talk to that might know a prospect. But you want to use the words and phrases they use. Like ideally, you know, you want to use the words and phrases they complain to their friends about. You want to use the words and phrases they write in their secret diary every night. But really, you want to use the words and phrases that they're saying to themselves when they're freaking the F out at 2 o'clock in the morning. What you want is like the words and phrases that when you put it on their website, they're like, are you in my house? Like, how did you know? I was just saying that this morning. And one way to do that is to ask them and listen, but that takes a lot of work. And so what I often do with my clients is we find a situation where you, the person who's trying to sell, can empathize with where they are. So maybe you haven't been in that exact situation, but where can you emotionally empathize with where they are? Like, give me a reason somebody would hire one of your clients.
They're embarrassed by their website and they feel like clients are not hiring them because it doesn't look good.
So then you kind of dig deeper. Okay, they're embarrassed by their website. They think clients are not hiring them. They're worried about paying the bills. Like, let's dig deeper. Like, what? It's always like, why? Like, I'm always with my clients going, why is that bad? And why is that bad? And why is that bad? By the way, these questions seem easy. They're really hard. If you ask them to me about my business, I'd be like, I don't know. Shut up. You're not my real mom. Like, it's really, really hard to answer these questions. But you dig in to be like, well, what is the real life consequence of that? Like, often what I'm saying to people is if we were making a documentary about how this person's life sucks right now without you doing the thing that you're going to do, what scenes would we see? Okay, we'd probably see a scene of them like opening a bill and being like, can I pay this bill? Or like, we'd see a scene of them them thinking about their mother going, you should get a real job. And them thinking, maybe she's right. Like, whatever it is. And then think about a time when you have felt that way. And then I actually have this whole like visualization process, which you can do by yourself at any time, where you sit down and you imagine being somewhere where you were when you felt the way that your client is feeling. And you imagine being there with your eyes closed, and you start to ask yourself, like, what does it physically feel like to be there? What does it smell like? What does it taste like? What does it sound like? If I imagined opening my eyes, what did it look like? And I'm not talking about like the pinnacle worst moment of your life. I'm talking about like a morning sitting at your kitchen table during this period of your life when you were feeling bad in this particular way. And then you start asking yourself, well, how do I feel? And where do I feel this in my body? And is it hard or soft? Is it moving or still? Side note, all of this comes directly from the therapy that I did with my therapist. I keep telling her she needs to get a cut of this. Anyway, so where do you feel it in your body? And then that really gets you right into that place. And then you can ask yourself, what am I thinking? And that's where you get the internal monologues that you're thinking in that moment. And as you dig deeper, like, in my experience, almost anytime someone is hiring a service provider, there is shame somewhere. And almost anytime someone's hiring a service provider, one of the internal monologues is, what the fuck is wrong with me? Almost always, I would say that's in that. And you don't necessarily want to put that on your website, and you don't want to lead.
But you can.
But you can. But you don't want to lead with those shamey thoughts, but you kind of start gently and then dig down. And when you can use those deep, deep thoughts that they're having when they're freaking out, it's so powerful. I want to talk about why it's so powerful. But before I do, I want to say, like, this doesn't have to be about anything particularly high stakes. People have shamey thoughts about like low stakes stuff all of the time. The shamey thought might be, I'm embarrassed when I look at my website. Ooh, it's so embarrassing. But when you can like write those thoughts out, when you can articulate those thoughts and put them on your site, it does so many things for people. If it's the secret thoughts that they're thinking, it gives you credibility because it says, I solve your problem and not everybody else's, but like, I understand yours. It shows that you're going to be gentle with them. And when they come to you and say, oh, I don't really know what branding I should have, you're not going to be like, why not? What's wrong with you? Like, you're going to be careful with them. And then it does two really powerful things. Even if they never buy from you, one, it gives them hope because it says to them, this problem is solvable. You are not completely fucked. And it says to them the four most powerful words in the English language, which are, you are not alone. Because when we feel like we're not alone, we feel like we belong, and we crave belonging more than anything else. Like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, it's like food, shelter, belonging. We crave it more than happiness. It lets off all these lovely things in our brain, like serotonin to calm us down and dopamine to make us happy. And you're telling them they belong not when they've quote unquote fixed themselves, but where they are right now. Because if you have bothered your ass to get this on a sales page, to get this on a web page, there must be more than one person in the entire universe who feels this way. And so you're giving them the thing that they crave most in the entire universe before they've spent a dime on you, which from a service point of view is wonderful. And from a sales and marketing point of view, it's like, whoa, like they have made me feel this good before I've spent any money. What's going to happen if I actually work with them? And so the reason I say all of this is for those people who kind of feel guilty and pushy about selling is like, what if you could write a sales page or have a sales conversation that helps somebody irrespective of whether they buy from you, that is a gift, not a shove. And then that way they're much more likely to, because they're not thinking, they're not watching you go, oh, how do I open this milk? And thinking, oh, they're just following the tropes. They're being like, oh, wow, this person actually really cares about me, because that's how it feels. And I felt that way with sales pages from people I haven't bought from. Like the very first life coach I ever hired was a time when I had started my business and I felt like I sat down and got to the end of every day and had achieved nothing and felt like I was such a failure and was doing 50 things. And I looked at this sales page of this woman who was like, do you get to the end of every day and feel like you've achieved nothing? And I was like, what? Like, there's a cure for this? I just was like, Marsha's a loser. Here's her sentence for the rest of her life. And this woman, I didn't really click with her kind of personality. She's very like, I just say what I mean. And I like super respect those people, but I'm also a bit afraid of them. But through her found another coach. But I just say that as an example of like, and then you're going to find your people. Because the other thing you can do when you're using this human being language is you can put a bit of yourself in there. And again, when you're a service provider, it's kind of important that people like you. Like if you're going to hire like, I don't know, Deloitte or something, some massive agency, you're probably yourself some massive agency and you don't care that much about whether you like the person. But if you're like a smaller business or you're hiring a smaller business, it's important that you like the person, especially if they're doing your like design and your branding and stuff. I mean, if you don't click with them. And so this is where you can put your personality in. So for me, I like to make a lot of jokes, in case that's not clear. And so it'll be sometimes when you're doing the pain points that you'll be like, maybe you feel this, maybe you'll feel this, maybe you feel this. And then the third one will always be something totally ridiculous. You know, maybe I shouldn't be doing this job. Maybe I should get a real job. Maybe I should move to Thailand and become a surf instructor, even though I've never been to Thailand and I don't know how to surf. You know, something that's not a great example. It's not that funny, but you know what I mean? Like, that's where you can put the little jokes in.
Yeah.
And the way to do it, and one, I'm going to make you a secret webpage, which is going to be yesyesmarsha.com/no BS. And on there, I'm going to put a sales page template that I have, which is not the only way to write a sales page. It's just a way. But essentially, it's you going, are you demographic who has problem and wants to get to desired outcome? Then you like massage the problem a little more, not to poke the wound, but to be like, am I really getting you? Like, is this you? Then you say, do you wish for desired outcome? And only then do you introduce yourself as the solution.
Gotcha. Okay. So I'm going to pause right here because I'm going to take what you just said and this amazing sales page template you're going to give us and apply it to the way that we do things, because we really don't use sales pages on our websites at all. We use the website as a way to exactly that, like, hey, I am for you. So all of this still applies, everyone listening. All of this still applies because all of this messaging should be the only messaging on your website. And really, our goal is to get people on a call, because you're exactly right. In branding and design, this person has to really like you and trust you. And that can't, in my experience anyway, especially at this high ticket stuff, there has to be a two-way conversation for that to happen. Now, you can build a lot of trust, but you're not going to hire someone. I wouldn't even want someone to hire me to do their brand until I've spoken to them to make sure that they are a perfect fit. So it's like the copy on the website. And by the way, when we say copy on website, that also translates to any copy, right? Like any email you send, any post you make on social media, like everything that you're saying, Marsha, right? Like it applies to anything you write is going to go through. You want to kind of hit these points. And I guess as I'm listening to you, the part where you said you got to bring you into it is something I'd love to unpack with you, because imagine I have a mastery, you know, we've got almost 100 people in here that are all selling the same thing. Now, it's amazing. People think, oh, we're all competitors. And then when you get inside, you're like, oh, literally, none of us are competitors, because we all have our specific personality and our own specific niche. And together, those two things, there is nobody that is, those two are the same. Yes. So if all the pain points are going to be generally the same and all the desires are going to be generally the same, what do we have except us to put into it? And I would love to know from you, like, how do we take it so that everyone's, you know, copy messaging doesn't say like, and do you just feel like you're a total fuckwad because you didn't do this right? Like I said, you could say it. Well, if you said it, you'd probably be an outlier and that would be part of your brand. Right. Guilty. That might be one way, but how does everybody else who doesn't want to do that, how does everybody else bring their story, their personality, and what does it mean to bring your story into this messaging, since everybody in here is going to be working with a lot of the same general vibes?
Okay, three things on that.
Yes.
One is, like, everyone's working the same thing, but you're not necessarily targeting the same people.
No, definitely.
Like, I think that's a good thing to remember, because sometimes when we're in these groups, we're like, oh, everyone's doing the same thing. But actually, other people don't know that. Like, we're in a little bubble and most people are not in that bubble. And so you may be the only person doing what you do that they encounter. That's the first thing. The second thing, I think, is what we touched on a little bit already, is like putting your personality, like if you're a person who makes a lot of jokes, put in jokes. Like you said, the thing of like, are you a fuckwad? I wouldn't do that, because I have like people in my audience who, there's some things where I'm like, I don't want you in my audience if you don't like this. Like if you don't like my left-leaning politics, you probably should step away from me right now. Right. Like if you don't like the fact that I'm queer, this is not going to work for us. But if you don't like swearing, I'm like, eh, you can come in. So I would never swear on a copy page. But for some people, they absolutely would, because they want to single people out. But then the third thing is storytelling. And what I love about this, and by the way, if anyone's like, I can't tell stories or I don't have any good stories, I've got you. Don't worry. Because storytelling is this super easy, super low stakes way of getting your personality across. And I want to be clear, when I say storytelling, I don't mean the story of your life, beginning, middle, and end. What's your hero's journey arc? I mean, describe a tiny little moment that happened to you. And so telling a story could be you telling a story about, like I told the story the other day, I was selling something on my email, an affiliate thing. And I told this story about, so I have a guilty pleasure. I'm like, really, like, don't ever eat in chains. Like every coffee shop I go to is independent. But my guilty pleasure is I love to like mindlessly scroll my phone while gorging food in a food court, like in a giant, you know, soulless, not in any way independent food court. So one time I was walking into this supermarket. And as I walked in, there was a giant sign above that said, Dave's Organic Bread. And I was like, okay. And then I walked like two steps further. And on the floor, there was a huge decal saying, Dave's Organic Killer Bread. And I was like, wow, Dave's is really putting a lot of money into this. And like three steps later, there's another one. I was like, God, who is in this marketing department? And I go and get my trashy food and I go and sit down in my food court. And I look up and there is, I'm not lying, a 40-foot display in front of me that says, Dave's Organic Killer Bread. And I'm like, leave a bit of money for the actual bread marketing department. And I sit there and I eat my food and I get to the end of my meal and I walk out of the supermarket. And as I'm walking past the till, I think I should buy some of that Dave's bread. It seems like it's really good. And like the signs had told me nothing about how good the bread was. It was just that marketing is really about showing yourself over and over again. So that was the message, is like, you just have to show yourself over and over again. Now that story, the narrative of that story is woman walks into food court, sees some signs, has a thought. Like that's not epic. There's no hero's journey in there. I didn't like, they're not going to turn that into a movie, but it's just about this little moment that happened to me. And the moment can be even smaller, you know? And I think this is where you can make yourself likable because you put a little bit of vulnerability in there. And again, I'm not talking about you being like, when my life fell apart and I was going through a divorce. I mean, like you went to order a coffee and you accidentally asked for a smarte instead of a latte. And then you felt like an idiot, but then the barista drew a smiley face on your cup and then you knew you were okay. That tells me you are not a perfect human, which makes me like you more because I'm not going to feel like you're going to judge me for not being a perfect human. And if you're a certain kind of person, you're like, oh, that's totally the kind of thing I would do. And now I feel close to you. And I know a little bit about you. So just stories, just like these little tiny moments that are just your lenses on the world. And I think that's a way, because nobody else has your stories. You might have the exact same nature as someone else. You might have the exact same level of experience. You might have the same style, but no one else has your stories. And that's a way to make you stand out.
So the story was, I went into a store and there was lots of advertising. And by the time I left, I wanted to buy the thing. But yeah. You started the story with, I don't like to eat at chains, right? There's something I know about you. And I have a guilty pleasure of basically doing that, doing this like trashy thing that's the opposite of what I think to do, which is, that's really like a big chunk of what the purpose of that story was, because now we like know a bit about your personality, and that part almost had nothing to do with the actual point of the story, but it was an opportunity. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong here. And this is what I'm hearing. Like that was an opportunity for you to be like, here are a couple things about me and my personality.
Yes. An opportunity for me to put in my personality, and also a way to make you slightly interested in me walking into a supermarket. Because it's like, if I'm just like, one time I was walking into this supermarket and I saw a sign, you'd be like, well, how are we going with this? So when I talk about storytelling, and I know there are a lot of brilliant storytelling teachers who talk about like this structure and that structure and the other structure. I find that hard because I find it hard to like put my life into those structures.
I think that's important too.
I think if you're telling a 10-minute performative story on stage at a show like The Moth, absolutely you need some structure. But if you're using storytelling in copy, like on a social media post, anything like that, all you need is an action scene. So when you're telling a story, you're making a movie inside your listener's brain. So if you think about movies, most movies are mostly made up of action scenes. They have a bit of montage, they have a bit of voiceover, but it's mostly action scenes. And so action scenes is like everything is happening in real time, all from the perspective of one or a couple of the characters. And so you want your stories to be like that as well, rather than saying like, oh, I went to Alaska and I met these two scientists who were really cool. And I went to three parties and I saw two different kinds of wildlife. And you'd be like, okay. It's saying, you know, I step outside, it's 11 o'clock on a Monday morning. And as the sun hits my face, I feel this excitement in the pit of my belly. I put my hand in my pocket. Money is there. This is going to happen. And that's about me going to the corner store to buy a bag of chips. Like, it's not about the story that you're telling, it's about how you tell it. And the way to write those action scenes is, one, to get somewhat granular. You don't need to tell every single detail, but just give us a vague sense of where you are. But two, ask yourself these two questions over and over again. What did it look like? And how did I feel? So what did it look like is like anything sensory, you know, what did it smell like? What did it sound like? Are you standing alone in your bedroom, or are you standing with 500 people in a giant conference room? Like, just give us the vague sense that we need to make that picture. And then the most important one is, how did I feel? How did I feel? How did I feel? Because that is what's going to draw us into the story. Even me saying the thing about guilty pleasures and food courts is like a way of putting emotion into, I'm walking into a supermarket, because you know that I feel a little bit conflicted about being there. Like, I kind of feel like a bad person, but I'm also quite excited because I get to do my food court thing. And the reason that emotion is so important is that it gives us the stakes. It tells us whether or not to care about the story. You know, I gave my order wrong, you know, in the coffee shop, and I felt stupid. It's like, okay, now we know. Now the stakes are high. Oh, what's going to happen with the barista? And then they do a smiley face and we're like, whoo, now we're relieved, because we know that that barista doesn't think we're an idiot. It draws us in. It's also how we relate to any story, because we haven't been in every situation. Like, maybe you've never gone into a coffee shop and asked for a smarty instead of a latte, but you know how it feels to do something and then feel stupid. And to kind of sit in that tension until it's released. And so
the
maybe
feeling is making it relatable.
Yes. Yeah. The sensory details sometimes make it relatable, but really the emotion is what makes it relatable. And that's often where the vulnerability comes in, because unless your emotion in every story is great because my life is perfect all of the time, usually there's a bit of vulnerability in emotion, even if it's positive emotion. Like, if you're super excited because some dorky thing happened, like, that's a little bit of vulnerability in there. But it's just giving a little moment where you have the emotion in there. And I think this also goes for when you're telling stories about clients. Like, if you're trying to say to a new client, well, a lot of my clients do this, or a lot of my clients do that, you can just give them the example, or you can give them the little story. You can say, well, I did have this one client who was really nervous about his branding because he felt like it needed to look good in front of corporates. And then we did X, Y, Z. And then actually when we rolled it out, he was getting these incredible compliments. And so then from them, we can assume that he was having a good emotion. You know, we talk about those before and after stories, the story of how their life sucks before they hire you and how their life is wonderful afterwards. You can throw a little bit of emotion into that, even if you're talking about other people.
I love that. These are skills that you obviously hone over time to even be able to pull these great little tidbits out. Like, how do people who don't talk like this, don't think like this, don't communicate like this start? You had those two questions. What did it look like? How did it feel?
What did it look like and how did you feel? Yeah. Literally, like, practice, and practice in low stakes way, like practice on your friends. Practice. Facebook is such a great low stakes way to practice. You can just like post a picture and be like, the other day I saw a dog and I felt nervous because I thought it might bite me, but then it licked my hand and I felt better, and just be like, how do people respond to that? And I feel like when you're starting out, it's about quantity rather than quality. It's about doing this as often as you can. The other thing is, like, observe, become a scientist, have like a tiny scientist in your brain at all times. When you hear stories or anything that looks vaguely like a story, and usually the way you know it's a story is like, is it describing a thing that happened? If so, it's a story. And see, like, what do you like about stories? What don't you like about stories? I found almost always when I don't like a story, it's either because they're doing voiceover instead of action scene. They're just telling me all the top line things without describing any scenes, or because there's no emotion in there. And it's really hard for me to care about a story when there's no emotion in there. Or the emotion is just like, everything's great because I'm so cool all of the time. So start to notice what you don't like about stories, what you do like about stories. Like, poke around. I mean, the advantage of like having a lot of other people who are doing what you do is you can start looking around their websites and being like, okay, who has a website I really like? And it doesn't have to be in your industry. It can be anything. But just be like, you mentioned Laura Bell Gray earlier. I feel like she is the gold standard for telling stories to sell. Like, get on her mailing list. Talkingshrimp.com is her website, because she sends out emails. Like, I will read her emails instead of scrolling Facebook if I need a little break, because it's just a cute little story. And then I end up buying things from her that I never meant to buy, because after a while I'm like, oh, I did need that. But it's also, she just is so good at taking a story where almost nothing happened and making it completely entertaining. And so I think it's studying. I mentioned The Moth earlier. So The Moth is a live show that's kind of across the US, which is a storytelling show. They have a great podcast and a radio show. It's free. This American Life is like another place that tells a lot of stories. I found The Moth through them. I run a storytelling show. I should plug my own show before someone else's. I run a storytelling show called True Stories Told Live Toronto. We have about 100 stories up on
is it a podcast? YouTube.
So it's not a it has been a podcast at points. I think you can probably find it somewhere. But if you go to YouTube and type in True Stories Toronto, it shows up. So those are 10-minute long performative stories. But again, you can listen. I've coached almost all the stories on there. And so you can hear my style in there. You can hear the what did it look like. You can hear the how did you feel. And just start noticing, like, what do you like and what don't you like? When I first got into The Moth, it was long before I started my show. At the time, this shows you how long ago it was. You had to buy CDs if you wanted to listen to CDs. I think it's before they had a podcast. And you could only buy 10 CDs at a time. And I like went to a show. I was living in London, but I visited New York. I went to a show and I bought 10 CDs. And then I just spent 2 months sitting on the tube in London. And on the tube in London, you have to understand, this is the subway. Nobody talks to each other. Like, you do not. If something weird happens, you might briefly make eye contact with someone, but probably not, because they could be a murderer. So nobody talks to each other. And I would sit in these packed tubes, sometimes bursting out laughing, but more often than not, just going, and clapping my hand to my mouth because something terrifying had happened on the story, because the stories are all so gripping. But yeah, listen to stories and just start to observe, like, where do you see stories out in the wild? Which ones do you like? Why do you like them? Which ones don't? I just felt like you learn more from things that you don't like. Which ones don't you like? And why don't you like them? Is it because it was voiceover? Is it because it didn't have emotion in it? Is it because it went on too long?
You're making me think of certain people in my life who it's just top line. There's no stakes. It's just this happened. And you get to the end and you're like, why did you tell us that? No purpose. And that is the difference between like enjoyable conversation.
Yes.
Really. Okay. This is so juicy. Okay. Some of what you're saying is obviously evoking ideas of fully fleshed out stories. I mean, a 10-minute story, obviously, or Laura Belgray's emails. Like, she will talk about something that happened and the email will go on for a few paragraphs before she gets to the, you know, and that's why you should buy this thing that I have. Mm-hmm. She sells in almost every email. It's amazing because it doesn't feel like it. You really should sign up for her emails. Yeah. And honestly, when I need to get into the creative writing mood for an email or something, I just pull up some of her emails just to remind myself that, oh, right, don't just start with the stupid whatever. Like our default, I call it default thinking, right? Like level one, hey, are you having this problem? Like that's level one. Yeah. And then it's like, okay, now let's go with, okay, so this, you know, bird flew into my window and it totally freaked me out. Let me tell you. And then, okay, let me tell you what happened.
And can I tell you the other mistake that people make is they start telling you this like rambling, not deep story about what they've been up to. My old sales coach, Kendrick Shope, who like changed my life, she's from the deep South. And she would do this thing where she was talking about email lists. And she was like, oh, you went on holiday to Florida with your family. I don't care. She's just like, oh, your dog is sick right now. I don't care. Like if you are doing any kind of copy, if you're doing email copy or social media copy, like jump right into the story.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that, because every time somebody posts an email, everyone does it. Because I'll have people post in our program, like, you know, if you're going to send something out, let us see it. We can give you. And it's always like, hey, hope you had a nice holiday. I'm like,
like we didn't have Kendrick Shope in your head going, I don't care.
Right. Like, why should they care? And I think of that as like the most valuable real estate is that sentence.
Yes.
So don't waste it.
Yes.
I got that from a speaking coach who said every person gets on stage and says, hi, my name is Pia and I'm from, and it's like, oh, you just lost him. Mm. He's like, no, come out and be like, I did a talk with somebody who he's a teacher. He's a professor. He said he starts every semester by walking in the room and picking up a chair and throwing it against the wall. That's how he starts every semester. I mean,
wow.
What an opener.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I want to do, I told my other friend who's a professor, or she's becoming a professor, and she was like, I can't do that. But like, well, would really change things for you if you did.
She could just like pick up a jello and slide it onto the table or
I
something.
mean, literally the whole experience for the semester will be different if you start it with that versus, okay, everyone, we're gonna get started. Yeah, go ahead.
Jonathan Fields from Good Life Project calls that a pattern arrest. And so which I in my I call it like stories, songs, stop, arrive on a horse. Like it's just something. One of my clients started her keynote in front of 600 people, walking out, singing Help by the Beatles with her guitar and making the audience join in. Like, what an opener that you're just like, what? You want something. And it's the same, even when you're even within the story, you want something that's going to pull people in. We had a story at my show recently. I coached her, Sabrina Sundari, but I have to actually give her almost full credit for this. The story starts with her. So it was during our Halloween show. So it was a ghost story. And she says, you know, I'm standing outside the elevator in this big lobby in Toronto, holding my coffee and feeling nervous because I really want this job. You know, I'm going up to my interview on the fifth floor. When the elevator doors open, this man runs out, then turns back to me and says, as I get into the elevator, and says, don't stop until you reach the ninth floor. No other floor is safe. And we're all like, like, how's she gonna get to the interview? Why is no other floor safe? Who is this man? So many things. Even there's a book by Charles Duhigg called The Power of Habit. And I bought this book and it sat on my bookshelf for a year because I was like, oh, a book about habits, Snoresville. What I didn't realize is that he is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. The first sentence of the introduction to the book is, she was the experimenter's favorite participant. Straight away, you're like, okay, why was she the favorite? What are the experiments they're doing? It pulls you right in. So jump right into your emails and jump right into your stories as well.
Yes, and no matter where you are sharing these, speaking to somebody in an email, on your website, on a social media post, I think people feel uncomfortable jumping right in. I mean,
Oh, they
I
do.
sometimes
It's
do. Why is
weird.
it uncomfortable?
Because that's not how we talk when we're talking to our friends. So context, by its nature, has to be like voiceover and montage because you have to cover a lot of ground in a small period of time. And when we're having coffee with our friends, we're like, oh my gosh, about 5 years ago, I worked in this job and I had this boss who I really didn't like. He always used to do blah, blah. Anyway, one day I came in, blah, blah. That's how we talk when we're having conversations because we have a lot more bandwidth to sit and listen through that. We're not going to be like, 20 seconds, I'm bored and walk out of the coffee. Like we're going to sit there and actually listen. Whereas when it's performative, when you're on social media, when you're doing a presentation, it's performative. When you're writing email copy or web copy, it's performative. And there's a lot of competition. People could click away or move away at any time. Even if you're doing a talk and you have a captive audience, I always say the first 30 seconds of your talk is the most important part because that's where people decide, am I going to listen or am I going to sit here, make my face look like I'm listening, but in my head, I'm wondering what I'm going to have for dinner tonight. And so it feels weird because it's not what we naturally do in conversation, but social media is not natural conversation. Conversation, as we know by all the fights we have on it. And so I think it's really it's important to just get comfortable with the discomfort of that. And then it'll start, once you start getting responses from people, you'll be like, oh, this feels pretty good.
What about this in-between communication, which is a reach out to somebody that you know, but it's a personal reach out, but it is something you want to get attention. Do you feel like it turns it into feeling like it can be salesy if you don't start? Because I've noticed this because I edit lots of people's emails where I'm like, don't say, hey, hope you're doing well to start this email. But I know that they get really uncomfortable because they're like, well, I'm sending an email directly to this person. And it feels like you have to say that in order to get into the email, or else it feels like it's a sales pitch when really all I'm trying to do is connect with this person and, you know, reconnect with them. What is your, I know
And
it's
so
a
what
very
do you,
specific
yeah,
context.
no. What do you suggest they do instead?
I suggest they jump right into if you're feeling this, I want to talk to you, or like something about like, hey, and I try to always remind them to use as much you and as little I as possible, because I mean, it's not a rule, but if you go through an email, it's like, I this, because the natural tendency is, I have a new thing that I think would be good for you. And it's like, I'm not interested in your thing. I'm interested in what you have for, like, why I'm struggling, or like what I could use help with. So I don't have I don't have a specific way to do it, because I think it does need to be organically for you. But I do think that you want to jump into you and what they're either feeling or struggling with, or you might be the exact person I'm looking for, you know? So I'm just curious,
So I would say I'm not averse to a little bit of social lubricant, like a little bit of like, hey, hope you had a nice Christmas. Like, as long as you don't spend a super long time on it. And as long as before you finish that paragraph, you say something that will pull them in. Like, I have a quick question for you, because then they'll be like, oh, what's the question? As humans, we hate an information gap. An information gap is like, you know, those BuzzFeed headlines that say like 12 weird things dogs did. You'll never believe number 3, and you click on it, even if you don't have dogs or weird things. So as humans, we hate an information gap. We're desperate to close it. We also love it. It floods our brain with dopamine and oxytocin. And so if you say, you know, hey, hope you had some nice holidays, I've got a quick question for you, then they're going to jump to the next paragraph because they want to know what the question is. The other thing that I recommend doing sometimes for your first little paragraph is spending like 5 minutes Googling them and seeing if there's anything about them you can say, to just be like, hey, I saw your company just won this award, that's so cool. Or refer back to the last conversation you had with them. So it might be like, hey, I just was, so this is the one thing where I think it's okay to be a little bit fake, to be like, hey, I was just thinking of you yesterday. I remember when we talked about blah, blah, you know.
Oh, but it is an art for that not to feel fake, because I get those emails all the time.
But tell me what a bad one looks like.
Well, I get a pitch to be on this podcast a couple times a week, and it's always, hey, I was just listening to your episode about this, this, this. I loved how you this, this, this. Anyway, I think you should have my friend, my person who's, you know, totally irrelevant to your podcast as a guest. And you're like,
question though, do you prefer those to the ones who've clearly not listened to any at all?
I guess when I read that, I don't believe they actually listened to it or cared. It looks like, okay, so you went to my podcast, you listened to an episode so you could write this intro paragraph. It's the reason I know that is because, I guess this is part of it though, and this is more depends on who you're pitching. Because inherent in the ask is that you didn't listen to it, right? Because you're pitching me someone that is not a fit. Yeah. If you listened to it, you would know this person is not a fit. So I don't know. That's the one I get the most. So that's why it's top of mind.
I had a thing recently where a guy pitched me and he made a video of like him. It was like a Canva of my, not a Canva, what's it called? When they do like a little loom, like a loom of your website.
And I'll watch those. Yeah.
And he was like, hey, really like your website. Storytelling, great. Praise and testimonials, love it. You're just reading the tabs.
Right.
You're just reading the tabs. You haven't actually. And so I think it's saying something that shows that you've listened. But you can listen to 5 minutes of that podcast, but be like, oh, I love what, you know, Marcia said about storytelling. I'm going to try that the next time I speak to a client. Right. Like apply it.
Gotta go deeper.
I call this the you transformed me compliment, that we all, you know, I think what we all really want as humans is, one, we want to feel truly seen and heard and understood. And that's to feel like we belong. And the other is to feel like we've been of service, like we've made a difference to the world. And so when you can say to someone, you did this thing and it made a difference to me, and it can be a tiny thing. I remember pitching this woman who I knew had got, it was on there was some website where they would like throw up pitches and then they would get like 1,000 people pitching them. And I read one blog she wrote about putting a pot plant on your desk. And I said, oh, I love that blog. I've now put a pot plant on my desk. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. Here I am pitching myself. And she wrote back to me immediately, because I basically was like, hey, you made my life better. So rather than just like, oh, I loved what Marcia said about storytelling, it's saying, I loved what Marcia said about storytelling. The next time I'm in a, you know, writing piece of doing a social media post, I'm going to try and tell a story, or even just like, I'm going to think about that every time I hear somebody tell a story. Like, it can be a tiny, tiny shift.
Or ideally, I mean, I feel like there is actually your pot plant story actually is like a couple levels above, I'm going to do that next time. Because to me, I'm just listening to you do these two things. To me, I did something
I did it.
That was powerful. Is like more, right.
For sure. But you can even be like, I'm never going to look at bananas in the same way again.
Right,
like
right,
it
right.
can just be a tiny thing. You're basically saying you changed my life. And here's
I
the
love that.
advantage
That's
of
such a good
having a
tip.
paragraph like that is it can help you with the subject line. Okay. So I used to teach networking and I made a whole video about subject lines. I have like 9 different costume changes in it. I'm going to link it on the secret
Oh, please
webpage.
link it.
But essentially, the subject line, you want the whole purpose of the subject line is to just pull them in. Like I talk in the video about how, like, no one's going to make out with you because you wore the great dress to the club, but they might start talking to you. And so the subject line is a way to pull them in. And so my favorite subject line framework is factual slash mystery. And so factual might be the actual thing that you're messaging them about, and mystery is creating that information gap. So say, you know, you talked on the podcast to someone who, I don't know, halfway through discovered that bananas look like, and no, that's too rude. Halfway through discovered that a mango really looks like a cat or something. I don't know. This is a terrible example, but go with it. And then you might be like, the factual might be like a question about your website slash cat mangoes or just something. And you and
Right.
it can be something you lightly touch on in the email. You just want to
Right.
make sure you mention it at least once.
But a non
So it's not just a
sequitur
non sequitur,
creates the
but non
gap.
sequitur. Yes, something weird. But also, I think a quick question is a good non sequitur. It's like a good information gap. Sorry, not non sequitur, but a quick, when
Yeah.
somebody's like a quick question, even when I know they're pitching me, I'm often like, oh, but what's the question? And so then I'll open the email. And if then in that email, it's saying the quick question, do you have pain point, pain point, pain point? Do you wish for desired outcome, then. And the answer is yes, then they're much more likely to want to have a conversation with you.
I love
One more
that.
thing I wanted to say about like
Yes.
going way back to the whole thing of like the pain point and the desired outcome is that's not just for web copy. I think that's so important in consults. When I have a consult with someone, I will speak at the end for maybe 5 or 10 minutes, but I try and make the first, however long I'm on the phone with them, say it's a 30-minute one, I try and make 20 minutes just me pulling out pain points, pulling out the pain points, pulling out the pain points, and then pulling out some desired outcomes. And so then when I'm writing a proposal, I am literally transcribing the words that they said and putting it in there. And I cannot tell you how often I have had clients from one-on-one to big corporate companies saying, I feel like you really understand our company. And I'm like, no, you understand your company. And I transcribed your words. But it's like I do to some extent because I was able to transcribe them. And so, and one of the things I've started doing is in proposals, I have the engagement overview at the beginning. And that's basically me regurgitating everything they told me about what the problems are and then introducing myself as the solution. But I've started writing them a little bit more like sales pages. I've started kind of telling a little story at the beginning of being like, okay, your company has done very well for this and this and this, but really, how did that happen? Through word of mouth. And how is word of mouth translated? Stories. Boom, introduce me. Like it's just, I think it's okay to start doing that stuff. And proposals are mostly so boring. So when you can put a little bit of color in there, and for
Totally.
me, I don't have any design skills, so I have to do it all with my words.
I love that you said that. So we don't do proposals. We do the paid lead product. And exactly what you just said is what we write in that lead product. So I want everybody who's listening to hear what Marsha just said, that we are taking their words. We have the first part is current situation. We want those words to be what they said. That's how they feel that you understand them, is by their words. In the lead product brief, which is essentially a paid proposal, but much more than that, it's more strategy. We are saying, you know, here's what you said, but this is the problem, and here's the solution, and then here's the strategy, right? Here's what we suggest, and that's what we're going to do. And I'm curious, I have to think about this because you just made me think of it. How story details can be put in. I usually tell them, paint a picture. I want as they're reading this plan, I want them to see. As I tell them, no design, just words. I want them to imagine and visualize what this could look like, because if you paint that picture for them, then you're the only person that can do it because you created the vision of it. And how could they go to
Yes.
somebody else to paint the painting you just described when clearly you're the one who has the vision? And I wonder if that counts as story.
Well, I might be off here, but my instinct is you put emotion in that. You talk about not just what is the website going to look like or the branding, but what's going to happen then and what's going to happen then and like what are
Yes.
the other possible things, you know? And you can even do it in a kind of theoretical way of being like, have a website that makes even your old, you know, Auntie Dot say, oh, I really enjoyed your website. You know, have a website that you are proud to send out to clients. Like, have branding that you love so much, you get a t-shirt made of it and you wear it when you're not at work. Like something like that. Again, it's action
So
scene,
good.
action scene, action scene, right? As a side note, this works everywhere. A friend of mine recently came to stay and we were talking about his dating profile and he's like, oh, I worry I come across as really intense. And then he showed it to me and I was like, oh, dude, you come across as so intense. And what we did was we just switched it all for action scenes. Instead of him saying, I'm looking for this, this, and this, he said, so for example, it was like, you know, it said something like, what do you want out of a relationship? And instead of him being like, for us to be close, vulnerability, honesty, he just wrote, you and I sitting on opposite ends of the couch, reading with our legs entwined. And it's like, boom. I know.
Oh, it just gave me like
you're listening.
chills.
And then he messaged me and he was like, you got to be a dating coach. He got like 3 dates that week. But it's just all little stories, you know. And again,
oh,
with
that's so
stories,
good.
I don't mean beginning, middle, and an end. I just mean action scene. Like that's just a little scene I painted.
Drop in.
Drop
Paint
in
the
like
scene.
Scene, scene, scene. Whenever you can, tiny little action scenes, because they activate completely different parts of our brains. And also they activate our emotions. Like you just had this really strong emotion to that scene. And I didn't tell you anything about those two people. I didn't tell you anything about the emotions they were feeling, but you had an emotional response. And as humans, we like to think we're so rational, but we base our decisions on our emotions, specifically a part of our brain called the orbitofrontal cortex, that if you were to kind of drill behind your eyes about 2 inches, it's in there and it's where we hold the memory of emotion. So when we're making a decision, we're asking ourselves, will this make me feel more comfortable in the future? And so that's what your clients are asking themselves. And so if you can paint a picture of their lovely, comfortable, nice future, then that helps them close that gap. Like that helps them jump over that line to be like, oh, it will make me more comfortable in the future. Therefore, I will say yes.
Oh my God. So many gems. Anyone who's listening to this is going to have to re-listen to this 3 times just to get all the beautiful gems. Marsha, I feel like you and I could just chat forever because that's what
forever.
We did when we met. And we were like, I think they closed it down and they were like mopping and they were like, you guys really need to go. And we were like, oh, okay, sorry.
And then we stood at the top of the stairs at the subway for 20 minutes.
We were like on the subway for a really long time in the middle of the night. So don't be a stranger. I have more things I want to ask you about. So first of all, I said in the beginning, but I'll say it again. Yes, yes, Marsha, which by the way, I've also shared that with quite a few people. It's just an amazing example of like owning your name, but also branding it and getting I'm sure Marsha.com wasn't available. I don't know if that's part of how it came to be, but I was like trying to give people URLs. How did that come to be?
Oh God, I need to make up a really great story about this. Basically, Marsha.com was taken. My last name, Shandor, it's like, it's hard to spell. And I knew that my business was going to change. So I didn't want something that was like networking is easy and fun.com.
Right.
And then I did this exercise. I was in this program, B School, Marie Folio's program. And she got us to do an exercise right at the beginning where we had to ask 25 people what our strongest quality is. So they had to write our 3 best qualities, which by the way, is an exercise every human alive should do. It's so good. And so my number one was kindness, but I didn't think that was that good for brand. Branding. And my number two one was positivity. And so I just tried and also because Hello Marsha was taken and Hi Marsha, when you write it out, looks like him, arse. Ha. And so I didn't want that. And so Yes Marsha was taken on Twitter by somebody's tribute to their dead friend. And I was like, oh, I can't do that then. So I put in Yes, Yes Marsha. It's the best thing that's
it's
ever.
It's so good. It is so you because yes, positivity, but I also feel like the yes, yes is like
it's
this
silly.
Energy.
Yes.
It's silly. It's energetic. It's the second you meet you get that vibe. And I was like, of course it's yes, yes, Marsha.
And I told one of my good
so
friends
much.
Just after I'd done it, and he looked at me and went, it sounds like someone's having sex with you. And I was like, they're clearly having a great time. I don't have an issue with that.
I think that's a great story, Marsha. I think you should take that one on the road. It is so, so good. Yeah. So I like share with people as a great example of also being creative. I just shared it with somebody because he was like, this URL is taken and this URL is taken and I'm going to put a .net and a dash. And I was like, no, you need a .com. Look at all the creative things you can do. But also your website is just great copy, great inspiration. You're going to make it at yesyesmarsha.com/nobs. Not knobs, but you can remember it however you want. And you're going to put all those links in it. Did you write them down? Okay, because yes. I wanted to see that video you said you would link.
Oh, yes, the subject lines video. I'm going to put in the sales page template, which again could work as a homepage template. And I'm going to put in there four questions to ask yourself before you write that sales page, which will basically, so the sales page template is literally like fill in the gaps. Mm-hmm. And the questions will give you the answers with which to fill in the gaps. Can I say one more thing on that? That when we're talking about the pain point, when we're talking about the desired outcome, there is a version of answering the question, what do you do? That is, I work with demographic who have pain points, mm-hmm. I do thing I do to get them to desired outcome. And if you can find a way to answer that sentence using that framework, then A, it means that when you answer the question, what do you do at a party, you will get clients because people will be like, oh my God, my sister was just saying that yesterday. But B, it's like the foundation for any marketing you do. Like if you're like, should I launch a podcast? Well, do those people listen to podcasts? Let me think about it. What should I post on social media? Am I addressing a pain point? Am I addressing a desired outcome? Something to do with that. Like what kind of story should I tell? Within a story, what elements should I pull out? Let's pull out the ones that have pain points. Let's pull out like the pain point stories, by the way, are the ones that are going to be like, you are not alone. You are not alone. You are not alone to your clients, especially if they then get to the desired outcome. It's like, and there is a route out of this. And here are some people that have already done that. And so I'm going to stick that. I don't think I need to put it in like a PDF or something, but I'm just going to write that formula onto the yesyesmarsha.com/nobs so that you can see it, because I think it's the foundation for all marketing and sales in your business, if you can get clear on that.
I love that. Actually, now that you brought that up, that sentence, right? I help, you know, with pain point outcome, right? I feel like there's different levels to making that interesting. And there becomes this challenge at a certain point where to make it interesting might lack clarity.
I don't think it needs to be interesting. I'm always like clarity over style. When you're trying to create function, always, like, it's the same as like the tabs on your website. You don't want them to be right. Like whizzy bangs or something. You want to be like praise and testimonials, examples of my work. But I think there's like a cute way you can answer things when you're in a situation. It's more about having that sentence. You don't have to use it like that every time. Mm. Maybe you just use a bit. I work with demographic. I solve pain point. I get people to desired outcome. Like the most important of those four things are the pain point and the desired outcome. We often think the most important is the thing that we do. It's the thing people care about the least. Unless you are one of two dentists in a small town, nobody cares how you do what you do. All they care about is, do you solve my problem? And where do you get me to? And you can find a cute way of doing it. Like when people ask me what I do, in most, like, unless I'm in a work situation where I think I might definitely get clients, I usually say I help people tell stories, because then people are like, and then I'll say I work with companies to be more persuasive through, I'll say to be more like ethically persuasive through telling stories, or individuals, I help them write keynotes and put their personality into their business.
It's so good. You're so good, Marsha. I love it so much. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Thank you so much for sharing all of this gold. I have so much more to ask you, and we'll just do it again. How about that?
Let's just do it again.
Okay.
Thanks. In the future.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. I'll be back next week with more no BS tips for your agency so you can find more profit, ease, and freedom. The No BS Agency podcast is produced by Yellow House Media. Coordinator is Lou Blazer. This episode is edited by Marty Seafelt. Creative direction by Sean and Tara McMullen. Our theme music is Knock 'Em Down by The Shrugs.